I've spoken to a lot of different people who, when it comes to God and spiritual things, they just make stuff up. Well, I sort of feel, and I kind of think, and it seems to me, and they'll even say I'm a very spiritual person, but there's no revelation. It's all imagination. They're imagining things. They're making it all up. Well, God has given us a revelation of Himself. We don't have to make things up or suppose. We follow what the Lord our God reveals about Himself in the Word. This is who He is.
Have you ever looked for shapes in the clouds? When they're big and puffy, it can be a fun exercise, and strange as well. You might see an elephant where someone else sees a goldfish, or a dragon where there's a bunny. It's a fairly subjective exercise. And today here in Connect with Skip Weekend Edition, Skip Heitzik opens up the first commandment, "You shall have no other gods before me." And with that commandment comes a question. Is God subjective like those clouds, to be defined as we wish? Or does He have specific parameters that make Him God, which we are required to follow? We'll talk about that today as we join Skip for our newest teaching series, God's Top 10. And this teaching, First Things First. But before we get to that, let's see what Pastor Skip has for you this month in the Connect with Skip Resource Center.
Ever walk into a movie late? You may never catch up on the plot. Well, same's true of the Bible. Miss the opening book, and you'll have questions all the way through.
Genesis is the foundation. It's the ground floor. If we don't understand the book of Genesis, we won't understand what follows the book of Genesis.
That's Skip Heitzik reminding that our redemption through Jesus' death and resurrection starts in the book of Genesis.
God says to Satan, "I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed." It's a promise of the Redeemer. It's the seed plot of the rest of the Bible.
Rediscover the foundation of your faith. In Skip Heitzik's book, you can understand the book of Genesis. Our gift to you when you give $35 or more today to help keep this ministry on the air. Request your copy when you give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer. Or you can call 800-922-1888. That's 800-922-1888.
So how we define God sets the standard for the rest of our life, and His Word has specific insight to help us. We'll see more of that today with His teaching, part one of First Things First. Now let's join Skip Heitzik in Exodus chapter 20, verse 1.
Now I have read that the American Atheist Society wants their own holiday, sort of like Christians have Christmas and those in the Jewish faith have Hanukkah, and there's been several suggestions like a day called Agnostica, seriously, that is celebrated on December 14th. Others have suggested, Festivus, which is really something that comes from a Seinfeld episode. Others have suggested Halloween. I'm suggesting perhaps April 1st wouldn't be a bad take on it. Because the Bible declares it's the fool that has said in his heart, "There is no God." A better translation would be, "The fool has said in his heart, no God." Not "there is no God," not denying the existence of God per se, but really, no God for me. It's a personal choice. The fool has said that. When we open the Bible, we discover that it's as if an assumption is made that those who are going to be reading it are aware of God's existence, because it just starts out, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." There's no philosophical argument for His existence, just God creating. Why? Because, once again, it would be foolish to deny the existence of God, as well as foolish to say no to God. Dr. Adrian Rogers tells an interesting story. He said that there is a trucking company down in the South that, as part of the hiring requirements, you have to take a lie detector test. And one of the questions they ask those taking the test is, "Do you believe in God?" And according to Adrian Rogers and this trucking company, that even the avowed atheist who says no on the test, it comes up on the polygraph, lie. So, first things first tonight in our study. God, how do we relate to God? What does God basically require of us. And we discover basically God expects two things. Ready? Here they are. Supreme devotion to Him, number one, and sincere affection for others. Supreme devotion for Him, and second, sincere affection for others. That's why, as we've already noted last week in our introductory comments, that there are two tables of the law. There is the first four commandments and the second six commandments. And the first four, we noted, were vertical. They are theocentric, God-centered. The second six are horizontal. They're anthropocentric. They're man-centered. They have to deal with dealing with people on this horizontal level. Even Jesus summed up the law in Mark 12 saying, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these." So today, tonight, and in the weeks ahead, this is going to be our focus. And let's look at the first three verses, which is the first commandment and its introduction. God spoke all these words, saying, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me." So we begin right where God begins. God begins with Himself. He is the top priority for everyone. You know, some years back, the Encyclopedia Britannica started putting out, they introduced a 55-volume set called The Great Books of Western Civilization, or The Great Books of the Western World. And it's the compilation of great minds, great thinkers, on all sorts of different subjects, ideologies, from art, medicine, law, etc. And it's been noted that the longest essay in these books is the essay on God. And Mortimer J. Adler, who was the executive chairman of Encyclopedia Britannica at the time, was asked why, and this is what he said. "It's because more consequences for life follow from that one issue than any other issue." It's the biggest essay because the stakes are so high. If there is a God, then there is a moral law. He's the creator of all things. There is a moral law, and there are consequences. If there is no God, then really nothing makes sense. There is no moral law, and it's just a stab in the dark. It's just a guess. More consequences follow from that issue. Well, if the fool has said in his heart, "No God," what do you say in your heart? You say, "Yes, God." And so we find out tonight in this first commandment what God requires of us and our relationship to Him. So there's three basic parts to this first commandment. And the first two parts form the basis for the third part. And you'll see what I mean as we get into it. The first part is God's claim. The second part is God's care. And based upon His claim and His care come the first command. So the command is built and predicated upon God's claim and God's care. God is basically saying, "This is who I am to you. This is what I've done for you. Therefore, this is what I expect from you, or I want from you." So let's go back to the first and second verses. "And the Lord spoke," or God spoke, "all these words, saying," here's His claim, "I am the Lord your God." Stop right there. 164 times in the Old Testament alone is this phrase, "I am the Lord." And sometimes it's, "I am the Lord your God," or "I am the Lord their God," or "I am the Lord who did this or did that." 164 times, "I am the Lord." And sometimes it's an introduction. Usually, it's a premise for a commandment. It's like, here's the ultimate reason you ought to do this, because I'm the Lord. You may remember coming home, or your parents coming home, I should say, and maybe you disagreed with a certain thing they wanted you to do, and you said, "Why should I do that?" And they would simply say, "I'm your dad. That's why." because I said so. And usually when you were a kid, that was enough, right? You didn't, if you were smart, go beyond that. I am the Lord. So God begins with this bold declaration, I am the Lord your God. And so what we see is God stakes his claim with his name. Now, we don't know how to pronounce the name of God. Here, if you were reading the Hebrew, it's a tetragrammaton, a four-lettered, four-consonant word that is typically said Yahweh, or the old pronunciation, Jehovah. It's the ineffable, unpronounceable name of God that probably means I am that I am, or I will be that I will be. It's God, the self-existent one. Nobody made him up. Nobody created him. He is who he is. He is completely self-existent, completely self-sufficient, and he stakes his claim with his own name. Now, notice that the first command that God gives in the top 10 is not, you shall believe in the Lord your God. It doesn't say that. It didn't say, thou shalt not be an atheist. Because again, there is that assumption. It's the fool who has said in his heart, there is no God. I've always loved the story about the atheist and the Quaker who had a conversation, and the atheist thought he could mentally work the Quaker out of his belief in God. And the atheist said, have you ever seen your God? And the Quaker said, no. The atheist went on, have you ever heard God? No. Have you ever touched God? No. Have you ever smelled God? And the Quaker said, no, or as the Quaker would say, nay. And the atheist smugly smiled and said, well, then how do you even know there is a God? The Quaker smiled and said, hast thou seen thy brain? Hast thou touched thy brain? And hast thou smelled thy brain? The atheist indignantly said, of course not. And of course, what followed you can expect. Then how dost thou know that thou even hast a brain? Said the Quaker. So in this top 10 list and this first command, there's no apology given. There's no explanation. There's no argument for the existence of God. There's no philosophical clarification. Rather, a bold declaration, I am the Lord your God. And that's important to note. Because everything that follows is a revelation from that one true God. I remember years that I spent working toward a master's degree and having to take courses in philosophy and philosophic thought. And you know, I discovered these philosophers are a confusing bunch of folks. I mean, it is wearisome to read and pour through their thoughts and their kvetchings and their wranglings. One person said, philosophers are people who talk about things they don't understand, but they make it sound like it's your fault. All questions and no answers. And I've spoken to a lot of different people who, when it comes to God and spiritual things, they just make stuff up. Well, I sort of feel, and I kind of think, and it seems to me, and I'll even say I'm a very spiritual person, but there's no revelation. It's all imagination. They're imagining things. They're making it all up. Well, God has given us a revelation of himself. We don't have to make things up or suppose. We follow what the Lord our God reveals about himself in the Word. This is who he is. I heard about a golfer who was very, very frustrated with his game. Some of you can really relate with that. And every time he got on the golf course, I mean, he came off fuming with higher blood pressure than he went on. So the psychiatrist that he went to said, you know what you ought to do is play a normal game of golf using all the same clubs, going through all the same motions, but use an imaginary ball. Don't use a real golf ball. Just go out there and imagine in your mind where that ball is going to go. Do a whole round of golf that way. So a guy went out and did it. I mean, he took out his driver and he teed up his imaginary ball and he swung and he imagined that it went 260 yards right down the fairway. He thought, oh, this is pretty fun. It was a good shot. And he took out his 5-iron for the next shot, and basically he parred the first hole, and he had a great round of golf. Well, on the 18th hole, he met another guy doing exactly the same thing. He was seeing the same shrink. So the first guy said, hey, you know what? I'll play you this last hole of golf, and I'll bet you $20. So the first guy gets up there and swings, and he announces, that was 280 yards right down the fairway. The second guy gets up, tees up his imaginary ball, swings, and he announces that, look, I'm right next to you on the first drive, middle of the fairway. They drive down in their cart, get to that shot. They take out their 5-irons, and the first guy swings, and then he says, did you look at that? It went, hit the back of the green, and then with that reverse spin, it rolled right in the hole. And so he announced, I won. The second guy said, no, you didn't. You hit my ball. You see, when you make things up, you can say and believe just about anything. And a lot of people will go through life with an imaginary God that they make up. They don't get it from revelation. It's all imagination. Now, why are there so many ideas in this world about God? One reason, because people have pushed aside, rejected, and suppressed what God has revealed about himself. Romans chapter 1 tells us, the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness. So from the beginning, man has pushed away and suppressed God's self-revelation as we have in his word. So he announces, I am the Lord your God. He stakes his claim with his name. Now look at the second part of that. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. If the first part was, this is who I am to you, the Lord your God, the second part is, and besides who I am, this is what I've done for you. I've delivered you out of bondage, out of Egypt. That's redemption. That's for us what we just celebrated a few moments ago in taking the Lord's Supper. Redemption. Now, redemption is what set Israel apart from all the other nations. They would celebrate once a year Passover, celebrating they have been delivered from slavery in Egypt. And it was so dramatic a deliverance that it's spoken of virtually everywhere throughout the Bible. You notice that in the Psalms and the prophets. They would always point back, that is their major frame of reference. God delivered us out of Egypt. They would always make reference to that. Well, I'm delving into this because this truth sets up the first two commandments. I'm the Lord your God, no other gods before me, no graven images, no idols. So keep in mind, this group of people, the children of Israel, had been delivered from Egypt. And in Egypt, the Egyptians worshipped a host of gods and goddesses, a whole pantheon of deities that were false deities. So if I could just paraphrase this thought and press a little bit more, putting it all in context, chapter 19 and 20 together, I would say God is saying to them, 3 months ago, 90 days before this, you were slaves in Egypt. You were being beaten. You were being tormented. You were being humiliated. I opened the Red Sea for you. I brought you through it. I brought manna down from heaven, water from the rock, protected you from your enemies. Did any of the gods or goddesses of Egypt help out in that deliverance to you or for their own people in Egypt? Did Osiris, the god of the Nile, help the Egyptians? Did Heka, the frog goddess, provide any protection for them or help you? Did Apis, the bull, or Geb, the earth god, have any kind of help available to you or to them? No, I am the Lord your God who delivered you out of the slavery of Egypt. Now understand what this meant to them. This was so pivotal that the entire Jewish calendar was centered around that redemption. For God said after the deliverance in Exodus 12, "This month shall be your beginning of months. It will be the first month of the year to you." So everything started once they were redeemed by God with his mighty hand. That's how they're to order their year, based upon that deliverance.
You know, it's always important to remember what God has saved us from as we wonder where we're going. We'll talk about that more tomorrow as Pastor Skip wraps up this teaching, First Things First. This is Connect with Skip Weekend Edition, and our current series is titled God's Top 10. So are these 10 commandments given thousands of years ago relevant to us today? As you follow along in this series, Skip reminds us that they're not only relevant, they're essential. And now to continue on this train of thought a bit more, let's go in studio with Skip and Lenya.
We're starting a new series, and that's always exciting. And this is a fabulous series because it's God's top 10. Hmm. And, you know, if you ever wanted to know what was important to God, this is it, right? If he made these top 10 things that were really, really important to him. And, you know, Jesus eventually reduced that to two: love God and love others. So what inspired you to create this teaching series, and what do you hope we'll take home?
I think I was first inspired when I worked with the FBI, and every time I would go into the office, under the huge insignia of the FBI and the picture of the president was the top 10 most wanted people that they were looking for, the FBI's top 10. And I thought, wow, you got to be really bad to get on that list. And so I just got to thinking, what would be on God's top 10 list? And I thought, well, actually, there is a top 10 list called the Ten Commandments. And I got to realizing that most people don't know the Ten Commandments.
It's my dad's favorite topic.
I know it
he
is.
He loves walking in and say, "What's number 7?
Yeah.
You're like, "Wait, what? Ah!"
No, see, that's good. I think that's healthy because we as a culture, as a church, one professor from Boston University asked his students the Ten Commandments, and he said, it's not that one person didn't know them. The whole class together, after collaborating, could not come up with a complete list of the Ten Commandments at a college-level course.
So I challenge the audience right now, pull out your pens or pencils and try and write the top 10.
There you go.
It's really challenging because I'm not sure I could do it, but we should memorize them and do them.
Here you have this template for society according to God. You have something fulfilled by Jesus Christ, since he didn't come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. You have many of them amplified and reiterated in the new covenant, and some of them not. So I think that's a good place to start, and it's foundational. And if it's on God's heart, and when God speaks to Moses and said, tell them that, here's the top 10 list. Well, what are they and how do they relate to us?
By the way, our Judeo-Christian ethics in the Western culture really have balanced our courts and so much of our civic laws upon those top 10.
That's correct.
So it's pretty important stuff.
Yep.
Well, thanks, guys. And if you love the teaching you hear on Connect with Skip Weekend Edition, remember you can view and hear more with the Skip Heitzik Roku channel. Watch anytime from the comfort of your couch, and it's free to add today. That's the Skip Heitzik Roku channel, and all the details at connectwithskip.com. We'll put First Things First again next time here in Connect with Skip Weekend Edition, a presentation of Connection Communications.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross.
Connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.